From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of March, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, DTN has polled farmers on USDA's baseline national average corn yield, and the combined GDP of the group of 20 nations is growing, but slowly. Dave Dickey will be in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. Hey, don't forget, as we close out our half hour together, we should talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. And along the way, because you've asked a couple of times, or at least a few people have, about the vintage aerial piece I ran a couple of weeks ago, we'll run it again and then let you know that, well, there are some special things happening on our website with that as well. It's all right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed in the wheat pit. Nearby March contract was at 7.01, up a half on its close. July futures were down a half at 7.03 and a quarter. In Kansas City, 7.37, a settlement price, or actually a closing price for the hard red, down 2.5 cents in the July contract. Back in Chicago for the corn pit, a close today at 7.43, up 2, but the May futures were down 5 cents at 7.09 and a quarter. July futures were down a penny and 3/4 at 692, and September corn at 576.5, down 5.5 cents. December futures at 554.75, 2.5 lower, and the March at 564.5, down 2.5 cents. March soybeans, a settlement price here and not a close, a settlement at 1475, down 14.75. May beans at 1447, settled 21.75 lower, and July at $14.25, a settlement price down 20.75 cents. August contract 1382.75, down 16.25. September at 1308, down 11.75, and November beans at $12.62.5, a settlement price for the new crop down 7 cents. Bean meal futures were off $7.70. Bean oil down 33 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the April contract at 128.55, down 15. June down 42.5 at 123.45. And April feeders at 142.72.5, up 52.5. May lean hogs down 65 cents for the day. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures in the April contract, $92.37 a barrel, down 17 cents. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, a penny and a 4 cents lower, at $3.13.5, and ethanol at $2.58.5, a nickel higher on the day. The difference between the $2.55 and a tenth of a cent, that's 6 4/10 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.68 2/10, 3 7/10 higher on the afternoon, and the heating oil or diesel fuel down 2 7/10 cents at $2.92 1/10 cents. Gold futures at $1,588.40 an ounce, down $3.30. And the U.S. dollar at 82.89, that's up 0.3 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high of 36 degrees. It'll be breezy out on a northeast wind, rather northwest wind, at about 20 miles an hour. That one will gust all the way to 30 miles an hour for the afternoon. And then tonight, mostly clear, low of 24. Northwest winds at 8 to 13. Tomorrow, 30% chance of rain coming after 8 in the morning. Partly sunny, a high of 46 degrees. Tomorrow evening, a 30% chance of rain coming before 8 in the evening. And mostly cloudy, a low of 29. Friday, partly sunny skies in 53. Friday night, a chance of rain after 8 o'clock. Mostly cloudy in 38. Saturday, a 30% chance of rain, and that comes on after 8 a.m. in the morning, partly sunny then thereafter, and a high of 47 degrees, mostly cloudy on Saturday night, and a low of 31. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, this is the closing market report for the 13th day of March. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson is on the phone line from her Champaign County office. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Ted.
Well, let's talk about what's happening in the marketplace. And one quick note on this 13th day of March at Vatican City in Rome, the Cardinals have elected a new pope, though I don't think we know the name just yet. If that happens to be released in this half hour, we'll let you know as soon as we know. Let's take a look at what happened, though, in Chicago for the afternoon. And there are a couple of things. The March and May spreads, because the March have gone off the board now. Tell me about that just a bit.
Well, it first goes off tomorrow, actually, is the last trading day. But when you look at today's trade and you're talking about a 30-cent difference between March corn and May corn and over a 20-cent difference between March beans and May beans, the implication would be that once we do go off the board tomorrow, if we remain, even if we're 10 cents difference, it doesn't make much difference. We haven't seen a real decline in the need for corn. So the implication would be that we will try to go to that higher level. Now, on wheat, it's just the opposite, actually. March wheat is trading at a lower level than where May wheat is trading at. And so, you know, that's going to be a market that's going to be questionable for a while. But these certainly, I think it's interesting that the day before we actually have last trading day, we've just gotten slammed in the ground. And you never know if that's an effort to try and get as much grain out of the country as possible, you know, ahead of this, because many people are not aware of it. Or if it's just something more related to unwinding of spreads, and I guess I would probably believe it's trying to get some of the grain out of the country.
Yeah, well, those will expire tomorrow, and they'll go off the board. Also tomorrow we get weekly exports, and they'll crush out too.
Right, which, you know, so it's going to be a busy day tomorrow when you look at the big picture. It'll be interesting to see what the weekly export sales actually show when it comes to beans. You know, beans didn't have a very good showing on export inspections at all. And I'm certain everybody's wondering, you know, there was some talk today that China was actually experiencing some negative margin numbers on their hogs. But the reality is, you know, they need to import about 5 million metric tons of beans every single month just to meet demand. And at this point in time, they're only averaging 4.35. So, I don't know. I guess I would never discount the fact that China still needs beans.
Hey, there's one other note that you sent along to me. I want to make sure that we talk to and address today. It's about currency wars across the planet. What's been happening and what impact does it have on agriculture?
Well, when you look at a currency war, the actual definition is competitive devaluation. And what a person is doing or what a country is doing is they're basically taking control of their currency and trying to hold it at a certain level so that they continue to either be competitive in the export market or they become more competitive in the export market. And I'll give you an example. I'm sure a lot of people wonder, well, why is it that it seems as if Brazil has a much bigger impact today than maybe they did ahead a year ago when we were talking about them? It's not just the size of their crop. They actually, since July 26th of 2011, their currency has lost 17% against the U.S. dollar. In other words, we've increased that much against it. Now, what does that mean? If you at $14 beans and you look at a 17% increase in cost, you're talking $2.50. It changes the competitive environment. And it also could explain why, you know, we shipped 700,000 gallons of ethanol to them this year rather than 1.4 billion, like, you know, in 2011. The bad thing about currency wars generally is if you start to see it become more widespread, you see retaliation, and eventually it doesn't help anybody. But in the short term, it can. And this has been the argument we've always had with China. You know, they control their currency value, and therefore they control basically where they stand in the export market. And now we're starting to see it happening in other places. And so what does it mean to the ag market? Well, it can mean just exactly what we're starting to see, and that's we become less competitive against them.
Tell me about, let's switch gears just a bit, because the RINs have just been wild this week, and there's just been a sharp move to the upside and really distinct.
It has, and actually it's been crazy. It was crazy yesterday again. You know, when you looked at, they traded as low as 60 cents. They're bouncing around up around the 80-cent level. And the speculation about why it's happening is, and it is purely speculation, is that they expect the EPA to actually raise the mandate to 15% when you get into the summertime. And I don't know if I believe that or I don't believe that, but obviously someone in the RIN market does, because they say, you know, if it goes to 15%, there's going to be a shortage of RINs, and therefore they become a valuable commodity. And so we'll have to see once what actually happens on that side. But, boy, they have been crazy going from, what, 2-3 cents all the way up to 80 cents?
Yeah, but they backed off pretty dramatically, haven't they? I don't watch that number.
They're down around 60 right now.
So they peaked up around 80, but the curve is just from 1 to 2 cents to 80 and then back down to 60 at this point. So it's been kind of fun to watch, but not something we didn't know could come, given the short amount of corn to produce ethanol this year.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's very true. You know, and that becomes more and more apparent. You know, as we move into the weather. You know, right now I like to look at the west. You know, and see what's going on out there. And you got guys out there that are just fighting with cattle and mud just like crazy right now because of the snow that they've had and some of the rain that they've gotten. And you look everywhere else, and we're looking at cooler forecasts, we're looking at wetter forecasts. The question that is maybe driving the RIN a little higher, too, is can we handle 13 months between harvests? And, you know, we harvested 6 weeks early last year. What if we go back to a normal harvest? You know, we're talking 13 and a half months between harvests. And so I think they have good reason to be speculating the way that they're speculating, but the weather's still the weather, and we won't know that until we actually have it.
Well, I told everybody that we would interrupt if a new pope, the naming of the new pope actually happened. Of course, we know that election happened quite some time ago, in the last hour anyway. We do have a new pope from Buenos Aires, from Argentina, Cardinal Bergoglio. I don't imagine I pronounced that right, but how about we go with this? It will be Pope Francis, and I believe that will be Pope Francis I. So in Rome, at Vatican City, new pope has been named, and that pope is from South America. I suppose that works into somewhat our discussion about currencies. I don't know how well, but
probably. Yeah. I'm not quite sure yet. I don't think the pope's involved in that too much.
Probably not. We won't do any more prognostication on that one. Anything else maybe on livestock before I let you go?
Well, I think livestock are, you know, we had a really nice update today, and then all of a sudden we saw, you know, a major fall back. And I'm not surprised. We're consolidating at this point in time. And just remember, if we end up with a lot of cattle that are headed to the show list that have mud on them, prices are going to reflect that, and they will be lower.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, that is Jackie Veig. She's with Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Joins us on a Wednesday afternoon. She and Dave Dickey and Kurt Kimmel, and frankly, I don't recall the third one, will be in LaSalle at Celebrations this evening at 6 o'clock for our Will Ag panel. That one's open to everybody. If you know where Celebrations is in LaSalle, Illinois, please do show up, and you can enjoy an evening with Jackie and Dave and the rest of the panelists, and they'll go through all kinds of market things tonight at 6 o'clock there in LaSalle, Illinois, also in LaSalle County.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Hey, have you visited our website or dialed this number yet? The website, of course, is willag.org. The number to get updates from us is 217-333-3434. We post things there at about 10:15 and 3:15 each and every day.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the Ag News for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, a new DTN poll says whether farmers agree with USDA's projection of a 163.6 bushel per acre national average for corn depends on where they farm. In Illinois, 39 of the 55 respondents think a 160-plus BPA yield is reasonable, while 17% think 150 to 154 BPA is more likely, and 16% believe the yield will fall between 145 and 149 bushels to the acre. In Iowa, the responses are more diverse, with the largest percentage, 29%, of the 73 responses falling into the low 150s category. Ohio is heavily weighted on the top end, with more than 70% of the responses thinking yields will be above 150 bushels to the acre. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development today says that growth in the group of 20 largest economies slowed in the 3 months to December, dragged down by contractions in all of its Western European members. The combined gross domestic product of G20 nations expanded by 0.5% in the fourth quarter, a slight deceleration from the 0.6 of an expansion recorded in the third. In 2012, as a whole, G20 GDP increased by 2.8%. The Paris-based think tank says there are diverging patterns across G20 members, but that largely involved a contrast between contractions in Germany, the UK, France, and Italy, and expansions everywhere else except the US and Japan, where output was flat. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says that it is cutting production of several statistical reports it releases regularly on cattle, grain, fruits, vegetables, lentils, milk, and other commodities in order to comply with automatic spending cuts. USDA will save $6 million by cutting the reports. Private exporters reported to USDA today export sales of just over 114,000 metric tons of sorghum for delivery to unknown destinations, that during the 2012-2013 marketing year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media and will host this evening's Will Ag Outlook panel at Celebrations in LaSalle, Illinois, tonight. That starts at 6 o'clock. He'll be there along with a group of panelists, including Jackie Vakes, who we just talked to. Dave and Jackie and the rest of them will be at Celebrations at 6 o'clock tonight. It's open, and if you'd like to go, go ahead, show up there in LaSalle. You can find all the details on our website at willag.org. Now up next, a story I ran a couple of weeks ago that caught the interest of more than a few folks, and I thought it might be time to run it again. You know, millions of farmsteads in the United States have been photographed from the air. The 35mm films, well, they're still around. And as you'll hear, it's possible to take a flight of sorts through time and your old neighborhood. Those hand-painted photos that hang on the walls of most farm homes in the United States were taken long ago. And the films, well, they still exist. Tom Wolf of Vintage Aerial is more than willing to take you on a flight through your neighborhood. Just log on from any computer.
You'll see a picture of me and my family in front of my barn, and that's how I got connected with this company. I bought some photos for them over the years, and all over the country they've taken aerial photos from a small plane. And back in the day, they used to send salesmen door-to-door, and they'd show the pictures and sell enlargements, and they saved all the film over the years. And so the photos that I have for you today are from 1966.
That's right. He said 1966. And get this, there are 26 million farmstead photos in the library from 41 states. And Tom Wolf, well, he's a great guide.
What I have in front of me is the map that was actually in the plane with the pilot when he took these pictures. Now, this is the coolest part because as we scroll through here, not only are you looking for your picture, but you get to see all your neighbors' properties, and it's kind of like walking down memory lane and seeing. Did you grow up in this area, by the way?
Yeah, actually, the first place we're going to, as long as it comes up, is where I grew up.
Okay.
That's
well,
it.
no kidding. You'll probably recognize all these places since you grew up there. Now, this is the next farm north.
Yeah, that's the Conradis.
Okay. Now we're moving on down the road.
That's Holtman's. That nice round barn is gone, or the round top. That's the Theobald place.
Okay.
And that's Steve Walsh's. That is my brother Larry's place. And that's Larry's place from the flip side. Hold it, that one right there.
This is the one you're looking for?
The answer is yes. Mom and Dad bought this place in 77 or 78. And the home that you're looking at was built in about 1860. And the question at the time when they bought it was whether they were going to bulldoze it in or remodel it.
What'd they do?
They remodeled it.
And Tom Wolf from Vintage Ariel let me relive that memory and create one from my home that I couldn't possibly have done on my own. And he can do the very same for you right there online at VintageAriel.com. Vintage Ariel, of course, sells copies of the original photos in the online tour, The Flight of Memory. Well, it's part of the process. If you'd like to see my online tour, the video version of the radio story you just heard, you can. It's there on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check the cash grain market now on the phone line. It's Scott Butcher. He's at the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana. Scott, thanks so much for taking the time. Still hunting down bushels frantically there to feed the ethanol plant like you've been for the past several weeks or not?
Yeah, definitely a lot more movement right now, Todd. I mean, we're actually we got a little bit weaker on our basis here this evening at Climbers just because of the movement. We've really seen good farmer selling lately, or at least some anyway. Plus, it seems like a lot of the commercials in the area are looking to move corn here because of the inverse.
So, the inverse is what you fully believe caused this to happen, and did you hit a price that producers wanted, or did they just get scared?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that we've hit a price that anybody was in love with. I think it's more of an issue of getting ready to go to the field or hopefully going to the field in the near future, so, maybe wrapping some of that stuff up before they do that.
All right, and then I suspect you're looking out at the month of April thinking, oh, April and May are going to be pretty thin. Do we have enough?
Yeah, it really feels like we probably do. I mean, it'll be interesting, obviously, as the spring and summer go on, what margins look like for ethanol folks and, who's willing to step out there and buy corn.
What's the conversation about RINs been in your office?
Really has not been much of one. I don't think we've seen much, change, and, don't anticipate there being one either.
So you think that's mostly a speculative move in the RIN market then?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. And your bids for the day are?
Cash corn right now, we would be $7.55, and soybeans, $14.68.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet.
That is Scott Butcher. He's with the Andersons from the Climbers Facility in Logansport, Indiana. This one news note, as we reported to you earlier, a new pope has been elected by the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican City, in Rome. It is Cardinal Bergoglio, who took the name of Francis I. Well, I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk about the ag weather with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City here on the Closing Market Report.
It's National Coconut Torte Day. The torte originated in Linz, Austria, and the recipe dates back to at least 1653. It was Johann Vogel, born in 1796, who eventually began to mass-produce torts around the world. On this day in agricultural history in 1813, Lorenzo Domenico was born in Switzerland. A famed restaurateur, in 1851, he joined his uncles in their catering and pastry shop in New York City. He transformed the business into one of the most famous restaurants in the country. DeMonico's was one of the first continuously run restaurants in the U.S. It was the first in the nation with a separate wine list, and famous patrons included Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, Oscar Wilde, and J.P. Morgan. In 1915, Wilbert Robinson, manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers, attempted to catch a baseball dropped from an airplane, but someone had substituted a grapefruit instead, which virtually exploded in his glove on impact, covering him with grapefruit pulp and juice. And in 2006, Robert C. Baker died at the age of 84. While a poultry and food professor at Cornell University from 1949 to 1989, he developed chicken nuggets, turkey ham, poultry hot dogs, and many other products. He founded Cornell's Institute of Food Science and Marketing in 1970, and in 2004 was inducted into the American Poultry Hall of Fame. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is on the phone line to take a look at the weather forecast with us. Thanks, Drew, for taking the time. Let's talk about the weather systems that have been and may continue to make their way across the Midwest first, please.
Well, you know, we're in a pattern here that's very active. A lot of systems coming into the Midwest from Canada. And normally, the Canada systems don't carry a lot of moisture with them, but in this particular case, there seems to be a lot of moisture coming around. Now, these aren't big major league storms for us, but they're small systems, and they will maintain moisture abundance across a fair amount of our region, and we won't have an opportunity to really dry out in a significant manner. Now, that's in direct contrast with what will go on in the southern U.S. plains over this next 5 to 7 days. They're actually going to see 70 and 80-degree high temperatures here as we go forward through the end of this week and early in the weekend, and that's going to really take moisture out of the soil out there in hard red winter wheat country. In the meantime, though, we will have the succession of systems coming through the Midwest. The first one's a very wimpy event. It'll actually come across the upper parts of the Midwest overnight tonight. It'll produce just a little bit of light snowfall from Minnesota into parts of Illinois, and there may actually be a little bit of a wintry mix of precipitation types when you get down to central Illinois and southern Indiana down into Kentucky as we go through the day tomorrow. That system will be followed by a more organized event that will likely produce snow from the Dakotas and Minnesota into the Great Lakes region and eventually across the lower eastern Midwest. So portions of Indiana, Ohio will probably see some snow and a little wintry mix of precipitation types with this, and most likely that will occur from Friday into Saturday morning. For the eastern Midwest, it will occur mostly Thursday night and Friday in the upper parts of the region. And snow accumulations of that event could run anywhere from 2 to around 5 inches in the northern parts of the Midwest and probably a dusting to about 2 or 3 inches in the south. And then we've got one last system that's a major league event, at least the way it is right now, a very significant storm for the northern plains and the upper Mississippi River Basin, possibly, for this late weekend and early next week. Now, this event is probably going to change before we get to that point in time, but right now, the models are certainly suggesting an aggressive system with near blizzard conditions possible in the upper Midwest, and some moisture totals will run anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch, and perhaps a little bit more, with some rain occurring in the southern parts of the western Corn Belt from that same system. We'll keep an eye on it. My guess is it'll be a weaker system when we finally get closer to the event.
What is your assessment of the growing regions in the nation and their preparedness at this point for the season to begin?
We're actually in very good shape, I think, across many areas. We have some dryness still prevailing in the southwest U.S. plains. This is going to be a cotton, corn, sorghum, peanut-producing area that is from west Texas into the southwest corner of Kansas, southeastern Colorado. The area has had moisture here recently, but it's drying down quickly, and they'll have 70 and 80-degree temperatures here soon, so they'll become drier still. But for the heart of the Midwest, I think our moisture situation, if anything, is going to be maybe a little too abundant as we move into the planting season. April is likely to be quite wet across the central and eastern parts of the Midwest. The western Corn Belt that's been struggling for moisture for a while is actually going to be in fairly good shape. My concern is more about subsoil moisture and problems late spring and summer in the western Corn Belt when our crops start to rely on subsoil moisture when the topsoil firms up, and we may find that there's not enough moisture to carry those crops for very long. So that's the biggest concern that I think we are facing this year.
Thanks so much, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated, and that wraps up the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.